like before dating, or can I be open to different places? Are you ready to start dating if you want to use it to help you to figure out what you want, like to see examples in guys and know whether that's right for you? What are important things that I figured out before consider getting married? Okay. So I guess first, if that's okay, we will ask Reve Weinberg.
Okay. that's a lot of questions all at once.
Right. basically about starting to date. That was the...
Right. Okay, so first of all, hello everyone. Good evening. Thanks to those who turned their cameras on. I guess I'll back up Revit and Cement for those who feel comfortable. It makes it a nice experience for all of us. But thanks for having me here. And I'm certainly no expert. I think Dr. Alper and Dr. Sobolovsky, Revit and Sobolovsky, I think those are the experts really in the room. I can only share my experience and working on the men's campus. Obviously, I have a little bit of an insight into that side of the equation. In terms of the question of when is the right time? So I guess let me introduce by my general approach to these types of topics or shiurim. I'm very not into the klalim, the general rules, the very specific rules that somehow govern everyone's personal experience. I like to look at the individual. I think that when you're dealing with a very personalized process like dating, I think there's not necessarily a right time to begin that process. I think it's different for different people. And unfortunately, I do find, and again, I'm just sharing my opinion. Everything that I'm sharing this evening is an opinion. It's not a psak, certainly. It's not a halacha Moshe Misinai. It's just my own seichel and understanding of the topic. But when people sometimes, and I hear it sometimes, whether it's a mental health professional or whether it's a Rebbe or a Mechaneches or just an older sibling, sometimes people impose their experience upon others. And I think that's something to be mindful of and to be careful about, because no two people are created alike. The Gemara is very clear about it, and we know it from our own life experience. No two people look alike. No two people look exactly alike. The Gemara says no two people think exactly alike. And no two people have the same voice. No two people have the exact same sound of their voice. And the tzaddikim explain in the same way that people look different and we're not really bothered by that fact. I don't expect someone to look like me or to have the same intonation of their tone of voice as me. So it's reasonable that people think differently than me and feel differently than me. And therefore, when I hear these sort of generalities about by this point, you should know this, or by that point, you should know that, I think it's sometimes very unfair to the process and undermines the individual. In terms of when is the right time, when is a person ready enough? To me, I always come back to one statement from Rabbi Shlomo Freifeld. And it's something that inspired me when I first read it, and I try to live by it. And I think it's so, so true. Rabbi Freifeld once said that life is an evolution, not a revolution. And what that meant, the way I understood it, was that life is a process, and it's a long process. Halavai, it should be a very long process. And people change, and people grow. And the goal is to be self-reflective and to be honest about where you are, to be able to be truthful to sort of where you're up to in that process. And again, not to be pulled in because your roommate or your sister or your mother or your neighbor says, I think I know the perfect guy for you and now's the perfect time, and don't miss out on this opportunity, that pressure that sometimes mounts upon us. Rabbi Freifeld said, life is an evolution, not a revolution. And that means that things will evolve. Things will evolve. Is there a specifically a right time? Do I have to know myself perfectly to begin dating? I don't think that's humanly possible. I would hope that over the course of a lifetime, you'll continue to grow and you continue to mature and continue to develop. And you'll see things with greater nuance. Do I think a person has to have a decent sense of where she's up to in terms of her hashkafa, in terms of her life goals, in terms of a certain healthy sense of self-awareness? Yeah, I think so. I think there's a certain baseline that a person has to be able to have. But is there a lot of room for gray within that process? I think there's a lot of room. So I guess just by way of introduction, is there a right time to start dating? I think you have to know yourself enough. I think you have to have a certain confidence in who you are, and a certain self-awareness of kind of where you want to be in life. But will that evolve over the course of time? Yeah, it will evolve over the course of time. If you would ask, if you would have asked my wife, does she think that she would marry a rabbi? She probably would have said no. If you would have asked me if you think I would be a rabbi, I would also say no. And I'm not such a rabbi. I have a lot of other, you know, components to my life. So you know, when people get very locked in on a very specific thing that they're looking for, I think that can be very damaging to the process. Be honest. Be self-reflective. Be open to the evolution of life, and again, have enough of an awareness of who you are and kind of what your goals are, what your values are, to be able to present yourself, to be able to consider what type of person I want to spend the rest of my life with. But does a person need to have it exactly figured out? I don't think that's something that's realistic. And I hope that everyone will be growing, evolving again in that healthy way. Again, I've said enough. I'm going to hand it over to the experts now, and we'll continue the conversation.
Okay, great. Dr. Alper? Oh, you're on mute.
Okay, sorry about that. So thank you. I appreciate it, but I'm a little bit also sort of reluctant to take this, you know, banner of expert, maybe on certain topics, but I really do like to think that the person who is the most expert in their own dating experiences and, you know, the direction that they should go in is really you, you know, is the dater, because you are the only one in the process, in your process. And I very much like this idea of evolution. And I do think that we have to be very open to the idea that this is true with dating, it's true with life. You know, you have to be open to the idea that you are going to change and grow through the process. So the more rigid you are going into it, I think the harder of a time you're going to have kind of going through it. Of course, you want to know some semblance of what you're looking for in order to start dating. I mean, that's helpful, of course. But I do think that the kind of the fewer rules you can have, almost the better off you'll be. I think that we sometimes box ourselves in and we say, well, I'm ready because here's the things I decided. So I have my, like, you know, package of my checklist or whatever it is and things that I know about myself and things that I know about what I'm looking for, and now I'm ready to go. And if you're going to hold on so tightly to that, like, you know, very rigid mindset, I think the process is just going to be less pleasant. You know, and I think that you'll find that this is true in really all areas of life, right? Like, it's true when dating, but it'll also be true in a marriage. Like, a 10-year marriage is not the same as a 5-year marriage, is not the same as the first year of marriage. You grow in the experience. The same thing will be true of parenting. The same is true of being a student. You know, as you go through the years of being a student, you learn what kind of student you are. You learn what works for you best. The things that you thought might work for you don't work as well as you thought they would. But you sort of have to give yourself the room to evolve through the process.
Beautiful. And Dr. Sobolewski?
So,
Rebison, doctor, so many titles.
Fine. So I would say that, first of all, what Rav Moshe Tzvi and Dr. Alper said is 100% correct. I would just add, because Baruch Hashem, they said it all, but I would just add that one of the important traits that I would say before you start dating would be really, like, if you're really ready to give, if you're really ready to make room for another person in your life. Because sometimes we find that, you know, people start dating, women and men, daters, begadol, and they don't realize that they have to share their schedule. They have to be flexible. They really need to make room, and they don't realize it until they're starting to date. And then they'll say, well, I can't go out then, and I can't go out then, and I can't do this, and I can't do that. So I would say that one of the midos that traits that you really should just see whether it works in your life right now is whether I really can share my time, my life, my emotions with someone else. It could be that right now you're too busy in school or you're too busy in something else and you can't start dating, which is, like Dr. Alper and Rav Moshe Tzvi said correctly, that means it's just not the right time and you need to wait a few weeks or months. But just to be honest with yourself and really just to really say, like, can I give? Because you'll notice as you start dating and, God willing, when you get married and when you have children, it's really mostly about giving. And then one other point that I would add to piggyback what Dr. Alper said and Rav Moshe Tzvi is the less rules. I'm not a rule follower except for halachos that, you know, people like Rav Moshe Tzvi and my husband tell me to do. But other than that, I don't get stuck on she broke the shadchan, so therefore it means this. It means nothing. It means nothing. Really, it means nothing. So I don't get stuck with that. I just think that the less rigid you are, like Dr. Alper said, and the less things you have on your list that are really not as important as the few that you have on the top of your list, the easier dating will be. I think that as we get older, and you'll all feel the same, the older you get, the more you realize that fewer things are as important as we thought when we were younger. I would say midos are most important, health is important. And as I age and get older, I keep saying, I thought that was important, that's no longer important. So your list will get shorter as you get older. So if you start at the beginning of really being self-reflective and being honest with yourself and saying, is that really, really, really important? Or is that just something that would be nice if that family had, but I don't really need it? So when someone's giving you a suggestion to like wean it down to that sounds good, or, you know, I'm being a little too picky. And if you find that you are maybe that's one of the next questions. But if you find that you're being too picky or you're too rigid, then stop yourself and consult with someone, whether it's a Rav or a Shadchan or a mentor or someone, just to check in and see, am I being too narrow? Am I being too rigid? Because you will have more opportunities if you're a little wider in your thinking and your practice and following less rigid rules that somehow we have in place.
Okay, beautiful. So as you all know, if you've been here before, I also like to give my own two cents. So I'd like to actually talk about the question, how do you know when you're ready to start dating? So what I'm about to say might be a little bit apicorsis or crazy or whatever, but I kind of feel like there's no way of knowing when you're ready. You know, we don't know when we're ready for high school. We don't know when we're ready for seminary. We don't know when we're ready for college. We don't know when we're ready to be parents. We don't know. We're not ready. No one's ever fully ready at those stages for the things that they're at. You know, I think maybe you're ready for ninth grade by 10th grade and 10th grade by 11th grade. So, and for seminary when you leave, you know, like there's a lot of things in life that you just have to sometimes jump in, and obviously within reason. I'm not saying at 18 or 16 or, you know, whatever it is, obviously you discuss with your parents and you figure it out. But I think there is a reluctance, obviously within reason, I don't want to get any hate mail, but I'm saying that within reason, if it's age appropriate, you know, sometimes you can't check off every single box. There's nothing to quantify. Oh, I did this, now I'm ready. You know, we don't have a test to tell us when we're ready. Sometimes by doing it and jumping in and just, you know, I guess throwing yourself into it, then you slowly learn that you're ready. And ready or not, here we come. So that's, I guess, the way that I feel about it. And the second thing that I wanted to point out is what is the most important thing to do before dating? And there's just one thing, and that's to work on your midos. That is it. You work on your midos, work on your midos, work on your midos. All our panelists just say, in marriage, that's what it's about. It's about giving, it's about being generous, it's about loving and caring and being considerate. And the more you can work on your midos before marriage, the easier the next stage of your life will be. So those are my two cents. Okay, next question. And again, these are all a few together because they overlap in a lot of ways instead of you know, having one question at a time. The next question, group of questions are, who is the best person to process and talk to about your date? Is it okay to share with friends, or better just to talk it out with parents and mentors? How often should girls and boys be contacting their mentors or BAM in the dating process? What information should be shared with friends, balancing privacy without having people be offended? What role should parents play in dating? How do we view this through the lens of Hishtadlus, Kibbutz Avaim, and Emuna? Maybe that was a little bit different. But we're gonna start with the first part of who is the best person to process this information with. Okay, Rabbi Moshe Tzvi.
Okay, we can change the order from one question.
Well, we have a question.
We don't want to be fair to to everyone. Okay, in terms of processing and sort of unpacking the experience of the date. Maybe I'll group this together also a little bit with the question that I know is coming up, which is, who should be setting you up? Who should we look to? Who do we trust to offer suggestions? And again, like I said before, sometimes it comes from less obvious places. There are no rules in this regard. Sometimes a friend will be the best person to talk to, and sometimes your best friend will be the worst person to talk to. Sometimes the friend who knows you so well will be able to offer suggestions that are right on target. And sometimes the person who lives down the block, who hardly knows your name, but somehow thinks she has the perfect guy for you, might actually be somewhat more on target. So again, I think it's important to be open in that regard. Over the course of time, you'll get a sense of who you can trust and whose advice you value and whose suggestions you value. I think we have to be careful not to talk too much, but also to allow ourselves to talk. What do I mean by that? I think there's a healthy baseline that a person needs to try to establish. So if I'm just beginning the dating process, I may not have a good sense of what's normal or not normal. So when I talk to other people, I get a sense of, okay, this is sort of a feeling that's appropriate. This is something that other people experience. This is an anxiety that I have, which makes sense at this stage of the game or not, right? Or this is an outlier. This is a little bit, too unusual. Again, I think, like Dr. Alper said before, the process is your process. I think it's very important to have role models. I think it's important to have mentors. I think it's important to have an openness with one's parents, if that's possible, and to develop that trust, to have Reveyim, who one seeks counsel from. But I always come back to the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. And the Mishnah says, and again, if Rebbetzin Cement said we could say a little apikorsis, I hope this is not apikorsis, but aselecha rav v'estalek min asafik. What's the connection between make for yourself a Rebbe, make for yourself a mentor, a Rav, a posek, and distance yourself from a Safik? So one could say that by speaking to one's Rav, by speaking to one's mentor, that's how I relieve myself from the sveikos, from the doubts that sometimes cloud our thinking. But I think there's also, and I think there's a real truth to this, aselecha Rav, one needs to have mentors, one needs to have people who they seek counsel from, but histalik min a Safik, not everything has to be a Safik. Not everything do you have to run by someone else and say, you know, like, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? Learn to trust yourself in the process. How does it feel to you? Not everything is a psak halacha, right? In a certain sense, obviously, you know, our hashkafa is also guided by halachic principles. But istalik min asafik, don't turn everything into, I have to ask my Rav this, I have to ask my Rav that. I think it's so important for you to be able to think for yourself. Because at the end of the day, God willing, when a person gets married, you're going to close the door to your home and it's going to be you and your spouse. And it's not going to be that a person calls, you know, a parent or a friend or a mentor or a Rav every time and says, what do I do about this situation? You have to learn to develop a self-confidence in your own ability to make those decisions. My sister-in-law's grandfather was a Rav in Columbus, Ohio for many years. And he was a student of Rav Soloveitchik. And I remember she shared a story with me one time that when he first became a Rav, when he first took over the shul, he used to call Rav Soloveitchik very often to ask him shailos, what do you do in this situation? What do you do in that situation? And eventually the Rav said to him, Rav Soloveitchik said to him, he said, I gave you smicha for a reason. I empowered you to make those decisions. Of course, will there be situations where we need to seek the counsel of those who are more experienced, who are wiser, who have a broader view of a bird's eye view of the whole situation? Of course. But not everything has to be discussed with your sister, with your roommate, with your friend, right? Or even with the shadchan. To be able to trust yourself and to gain a self confidence in that process. Again, it's okay to speak to others just to have a general sense. Does this make sense? Am I way off? But when you feel that you're sort of in the right ballpark in terms of how one should be feeling or how one should be thinking or what's appropriate at this stage of a relationship. So then I think it's important to turn inward and to learn to communicate with the person you're dating, even more so than the shadchan or the rav or the mentor or the sister, or et cetera, et cetera. So that's my thought on that question.
Thank you very much. Dr. Alper?
Okay, so thank you. That was like a very perfect layup for me of what I had been thinking about, so I appreciate it. I happen to be personally a big fan of... I want to say talking to your friends while you're dating. I don't mean running to them, you know, for like a full debrief necessarily after each date, or, you know, asking every single, you know, question that passes by your mind. But I do think that I think that secrecy from your friends is not great. And a reason I say that is because assuming you have healthy friendships and assuming that you feel comfortable with your friends and trust your friends and believe that they have your, you know, best interests at heart, assuming it's a solid friendship, your friends are a really great, like, kind of other eye, you know, watching the situation. And I just think that sometimes when you're in it, it can be a little bit hard to get like perspective, you know, when you're very in it and you're very maybe nervous or anxious about how it's going, and your friends see you and your friends are a good check on, do you look happy when you come home from a date? You know, are you as bubbly with them as you normally are? Are you getting quieter? I just think that it's an opportunity to have someone who really cares about you have eyes on the situation, and they can provide a good perspective. So I think that talking to friends can be very valuable. And I would say the same with parents. The reality is that for many of us at this stage in our lives, a lot of times our friends see more of us in a very practical way than our parents do. Maybe a little bit less true now if people are living at home. If you have a good relationship with your parents, which hopefully we do, then, you know, I would say the same thing there too, that these people who really know you well and really have your best interests at heart, they can really provide a valuable perspective. So I would not give that up so quickly. I think that that's really can be very valuable. That being said, I do also think that it is very important, and this is, again, goes back to sort of that process and that evolution that will happen while you date, is I do think it's important to learn to find and hear and then trust your gut. I think for a lot of people, that's very, very, very hard. We can intellectualize everything and think, you know, okay, line up the pros and line up the cons. And what do I think? And should I weigh this more than that? And when we do that, sometimes that's important and sometimes that's helpful, but a lot of times we're missing the emotional component of how do I just feel? How do I feel when I'm with this person? How do I feel when I come home from a date with this person? What is my gut telling me to do? Is my gut saying, keep going out? Is my gut saying, oh, I really don't feel like it, you know? And sometimes some of us have a hard time finding that gut, like really even feeling it. And then a separate thing is sometimes it's just hard to get ourselves to listen to it. So I think that that's part of the process. And I think that that's important. And I think that at the end of the day, that is the one thing that really no one else can tell you. You know, your friends can tell you what they see, and your mentors and Rebbeim, and, you know, they can tell you what they know from their own experiences and, you know, tried and true lessons that have worked for the people that they've spoken with. But at the end of the day, you really are the only one who knows what it feels like to be in the relationship that you're in. And it's extremely valuable to be able to find that instinct and to learn to trust yourself.
Beautiful. Dr. Sobolewski.
So I'm just going to add very little because they both said it right already. I would just add to the questions that you asked. I'm just looking at them one more time. Similar to what Rav Moshe Tzvi said, in terms of it makes me a little bit nervous when we're in the middle of setting someone up, and every single time after a date, whether it's the young lady or the young man, they'll say something like, I have to check with my Rebbe, whether I should go out again. They have to call Eretz Yisrael sometimes. Sometimes they have to find the Mashkiach wherever they want. You know, one time, two times, three times, it's fine. But if every little thing has to be checked, and like you said, you can't, you know, why can't he or she think for herself that she needs to check? It makes sense to check some things for sure and check, you know, run an objective person, some of the ideas that you're experiencing during the dating, but to be careful and not to ask every little thing, because the person that you're dating might start questioning that also, of whether the person has enough self-confidence, whether the person has enough self-assurance to figure things out on their own. That's one point that I just wanted to piggy bank on. And similar to what, again, Rav Moshe Tzvi and Dr. Alper said, I remember when I was dating, and I dated for several years when I was younger. And one time I went to a Rebbe, I should say one of my Rabbanim, that I really wanted to make sure that when I would get married, I would introduce the boy to him and he would be very proud. It was a big thing to me. Like, would he be proud of the person I brought home? So I went to speak to him when I was dating someone. Actually, it was not my husband at the time. So I was dating someone else, and I went to speak to him without the young man I was dating. And I said to him afterwards, you know, I really like him, but this is what I'm a little bit worried about. And I'm also just wondering whether you're going to be impressed with such a person. So, because I didn't think that this Rebbe of mine would be very impressed. So I was couching it that way. So he said to me, and I'll never forget that talk. I still even remember the classroom that we were sitting in when he was talking to me. And he taught me a very big, important lesson that both these speakers are saying beautifully. He said to me, you should just know that, forget about me. When you get engaged, this is what happens. You get engaged and everyone talks about it the day after the VART. Is he cute? Is he this? Is he that? Does he know how to learn? Where is he learning? What's he going to do? Are they wealthy? Are they poor? Silly stuff. Then they don't talk about you again. Then the wedding comes. Same thing. Was the food good? Was the food not good? Who was the singer? Who was the band? I'll never forget it. And then he turned to me and he said, but Efrat, after that, it's you and him. And that's it. Nobody's going to talk about you. Nobody's going to care. It's not going to be whether I was impressed, she was impressed. Whether if you decide whether you want to live with him, if you want to live with him and you feel like this is the right person, then go for it. If you think not, or you're not sure, or you're still questioning yourself, then rethink it. But it was a really important truth. And every time I go home from a wedding and I think, like, was the food good? Was the food not good? Did it matter? It's a real important lesson in life. It's exactly what Dr. Alpa just said. Like, at the end, it's your relationship. It's not my principal's relationship. It's really mine. So if you're happy, everyone's going to be happy for you. If you're not happy, people are not going to be so happy for you.
Okay. Right. So I guess I have like a little bit of a, also a different little spin in that I think that it's always good to have someone with some life experience who can be objective to bounce things off of, because your friends are amazing. Your parents are amazing. They may be nogei b'davar sometimes in all different ways. They love you so much that sometimes it's hard to see a full picture. And again, your parents are the first and foremost people. Hopefully everyone has parents to go to. Not everybody has that. Not everybody has a friend that they feel can be that person. And sometimes your friends, you know, will say, well, you know what, when I was dating this guy in high school, he did this to me. And, you know, they may have some, you know, I guess, perspective that hasn't maybe evolved to the marriage stage, but may be stuck in like the high school stage, or maybe stuck because they just got off a bad breakup, or they just, you know, there's a lot of different things going on in all your lives. Baruch Hashem, hopefully good things. So your friends are great. Your parents are great. Having someone who also has maybe some years of experience and perspective and distance. And like, you know, Dr. Sobolevsky was saying, like, as she gets older, she realizes what's more important. And we didn't have that, myself included. When I was your age, you know, I might have thought, you know, I needed this. And, you know, that wasn't what was important. And we'll get to that also. You know, sometimes people who are a little bit older, whether it's a Rav or whether it's a teacher or whether it's, you know, someone you admire, a Rebbetzin in your community or whoever it is, it's always good to have someone, a teacher. We Baruch Hashem, we have so many people for you. You know, specifically at Stern College, you know, use them, abuse them. I tell everybody, like, we have people here for you. And again, not to discount your friends or your parents, and everybody is wonderful and everyone has your best intentions at heart. But you do have a lot of people for you to use also. Okay. The next question. Okay, we're making good time. Okay. How important is it to be medakdik on small things? On the one hand, you don't want to be too picky, but on the other hand, you don't want to feel like you're settling. Is it okay for a person to have something physical like height that they care about and will choose to go out with someone based on that thing? Like they won't go out with someone shorter than 5'8". At what point does attraction start or matter? And what point does it make it or break it? Okay, so let's start with Dr. Alpert.
Okay. So, you know, this like everything else, I think, you know, there's not going to be one very clear answer. I don't think any of us on this panel are going to say, nope, don't be, you know, don't be picky about small things, or, yep, it's fine. Go right ahead. Be picky. You know, obviously, you know, we're somewhere in the middle and it all depends, and that's always going to be the answer. But I think, listen, of course it's okay. You know, everyone's allowed to have their list and everyone's allowed to have their things that are important to them. It's a question of how much, and it's a question of, you know, if you start, if your list is ridiculously long, then of course, you know, that might be a sign that there's, you know, a problem. I think that maybe a good way to approach this question is to ask yourself where this checklist or whatever, you know, where these things are coming from. So at the end of the day, like we keep saying, you have to feel good in this relationship, right? And, you know, if something is important to you, it's important to you. And if you can't feel good with another person because, I don't know, let's say you are 5'9" and he is 5'7" and you just are uncomfortable with it and you just can't get past it, then who would I be to tell you height is a silly thing to care about? Make it work. You know, if the whole time that you're with him, you're uncomfortable and you're ducking and slouching and you just can't, you know, move past it, then you can't, you know. But is that where it's coming from? Or, you know, is this list sometimes coming from things that we think should be important? Are they things that you really care about? Are they things that make it harder for you to enjoy the presence of another person when you're with them? So I think that's sort of the way that I would approach this question is, why are these things on my list? Are they things that are actually truly important to me and I think will impact my ability to enjoy a life with this person? Or are these things that I thought should be important to me, or I see they're important to my friends, so if my friends are asking for them, then I should ask for them too. You know, I don't know what the answer is. It's going to depend for each person, but that's sort of the way I would approach it. Everyone's allowed to have things that are important to them, and the things that are important to you don't have to be important to me. And that's fine, you know? But you have to check in with yourself about, like, is this stuff really important to you? And I also think that maybe a good way to think about it is to kind of like be able to rate levels of importance. If everything is critical, then that also probably suggests that something is amiss, right? Because really not everything should be, you know, we should be able to see the must-haves and the would like to have, and it's my preference, right? We should be able to see the gradations in there.
Okay. Rabbi Weinberg?
Okay. Yeah, that was very important and well said. I guess, you know, I'll add that we've heard the insight that at the entrance of a home is a mezuzah. And we know the mezuzah is placed on a slant. And that's really based on a discussion amongst the Rishonim. Should a mezuzah and the Sefer Torah in the Aron be placed in an upright position or in a horizontal position? And in a very strange halacha, we place it on a slant. At least that's the Minhag Ashkenaz, and it's been explained that at the entrance to a home there has to be compromise, right? That we have to make room for different opinions. Someone once said to a Hasidish fellow who inquired, why is it that by certain Hasidim they start to wear Rabbeinu Tam tefillin in addition to the Rashi tefillin when they get married, and the Rebbe said to him, because when you get married you need to know there are other opinions that count as well. So even though we paskin like Rashi, you need to make room for Rabbeinu Tam. It's very important, obviously, in any relationship to be prepared to compromise. And at the same time, like Dr. Alper was saying, it's okay to have certain things that just for whatever reason, and sometimes you can explain it as an essential value, and sometimes it just is. It's just a feeling of one's heart, which I think, again, has a place, obviously, in a relationship, that it just doesn't work for me. I just don't feel comfortable with it. Sometimes it's like Dr. Alper was saying, sometimes it's really coming from outside of ourselves, that you maybe alone with that person feel comfortable, and you have a sibling or a cousin or someone else in your life who's being overly judgmental, and that's imposing that person's value upon you. And you might, again, have a deep sense of respect and love and trust and confidence in the person who you're dating. So to be able to assess, is it coming from within me, or is it sort of that outside noise, I think is very important. But having said again that, you know, compromise is a critical component in a relationship, we also, you know, we're right upon Rosh Chodesh Adar, and Mordechai refused to compromise. He understood that there are certain things. It doesn't matter what everyone else is doing. Mordechai lo yichrav lo yishtachva. I'm not bowing down. And there was a lot of pressure to give in to what other people were doing. And he said, it's just not for me. And he didn't budge one inch. So I think it's okay to have certain things that you know yourself and you say, it doesn't really matter what anyone else thinks. I know that this is critically important for me. And just going back to that point about trusting your intuition, I want to just point out one other thing that I think, again, we sometimes get confused by. The Torah is very clear when it says, "Lo sasuru acharei levavchem v'acharei einechem," which means that sometimes my eyes and sometimes my heart, my emotions lead me astray. And we sometimes become nervous, and we should be. And the Torah is warning us, be cautious about becoming overly emotional about something in a way that's not logical. Don't allow the separation of the heart and the mind, so to speak, to drift apart in a way that's just unstable. And at the same time, Shlomo HaMelech tells us in Koheles, the wisest of all men, Shlomo HaMelech tells us that there's a truth of v'halech b'darchei libecha, to walk in the ways of your heart. So which is it? The Torah tells you, don't stray after your heart. And Shlomo HaMelech says, no, walk, trust your heart, walk in the ways of your heart. And I think the simple answer is that there's something called trusting your heart, walking in the ways of your heart. And then there's something called straying after your heart. Straying after your heart is when a person becomes, again, overly emotional about something in a way that you're deceiving yourself, and you're taking your rational mind and your logical thinking out of the equation. And the Torah says, be careful, because as emotional human beings, we sometimes get caught up in things, and it's and then we wake up and realize I was totally emotionally imbalanced in that particular area. But Shlomo HaMelech is also reminding us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us an internal system, an internal ways that guides us along that path in life. And learning to trust that, and learning to believe in that, and learning to say, you know what, it doesn't really matter what other people think about this particular matter. I just know that this makes me comfortable, or this makes me uncomfortable. And being able to own that, even though it's sometimes uncomfortable, as it was for Mordechai, when he took a position that was not popular with his friends and his colleagues and the people around him. But Mordechai knew, this is a core value of mine, and I'm going to hold out on it. I think there's a time and a place for that in a relationship. And again, it doesn't always have to be something which is, someone might try to convince you, this is not so important. The fact that he's a little short is not so important. If it's important to you, if it bothers you, if it doesn't allow you to look at the person you're dating and feel good about yourself, so then it's important to you. And it may be silly in the grand scheme of things, but it's important to you. And being self-aware in that way is, I think, very, very important.
Okay.
I don't even have much to add. So if you want, you could just go to the next question.
Do you have?
Only if I would just say one thing based on what they both said, is that if there's noise, if I've had experiences recently where other people have imposed, whether it's parents or even Rabbeim or good friends have imposed on people who are dating, that should bother you, that should bother you, that should bother you. If one finds that, then they should really stop themselves to speak to someone objective on the side and really check whether that is something that really should bother them. I mean, I know someone right now that I sent a girl, and she, Baruch Hashem, is going for counseling with her parents because some of the requirements that the parents have are very unreasonable. So no matter who she dates, it just doesn't get anywhere because this isn't good and that's not good and this is not good. So even though they might make sense, they don't all make sense. So if you feel that the noise is too powerful in your life and that you do need to just take time to figure out whether it makes sense or not, then you should take the time to go speak to someone professional like Dr. Alper or someone else in the field to find out whether, and sometimes it involves bringing in another party. Sometimes if you think it's the parents, if your parents or if it's even a good friend that's creating the complication for you, then sometimes you even have to involve that person. So just wanted to say that, share that.
Beautiful. I think also I speak with girls a lot about this. And I always say, like, on the one hand, you need to have standards. You can't just say like, oh, he's a boy, I'm a girl, you know, or maybe, you know, I feel like a certain generation says that, oh, do you know someone for this girl? And that's all they say, that she's a girl. So I definitely, you know, would tell you having standards and values and principles and things that you can envision your future home looking like. You know, you definitely have to have those things in place, and perhaps those are not the things that you should be wavering on. But on the other hand, you know, the flip side of that is that you still need to be, you know, open-minded and, you know, accepting of, you know, of pushing yourself a little bit in all different directions. You know, it's okay to say, you know, maybe This guy, I thought I would, you know, marry a guy with a velvet yarmulke, and this guy wears a srugi. You know, like, those are things that maybe, and I wanted you to know that if I had a penny for every girl when I was in CERN who told me they wanted this yarmulke and they got that yarmulke, or wanted this color shirt and they got that color shirt, I would be rich. Because like we said before, and this is all like a process, when you start dating, your list might be like this. The more you date, the more you realize, you know, what's nourishkeit and what is authentic. And again, you know, that's a process. That's an evolution. These are all words that we're all using because nobody has it figured out when they start dating. Like we said, nobody's really ready. And again, this is all coming together. And it's a process. And I think the more you date, the more you realize. And I might be naive, and I'm definitely naive. I'm definitely naive. And sometimes, and I tell girls this all the time, you should be looking for good father, good husband. Like, that's it. Good father, good husband. Like, there's nothing else. Like, you're choosing the father of your children, and which obviously right now might seem like very far away and kind of crazy to be so dramatic, but you're also, what is your home going to look like? What, you know, are you going to be schlepping your husband out to Minyan? Are you going to be singing by yourself at the Shabbos table? You know, there are certain things you can envision of what you want your home to look like. And that's okay. Like everybody's saying here, that's okay to have certain things that you want and you don't have to feel like you're compromising on. And I think the key to this question is how important it is to be medactic on small things. So the fact that the person actually wrote small to me is recognizing that they're small and that that's not something that should really be holding someone down. You know, if it was something big to them, that would be a different story. And that, like we all said, we can't change what's important to you. But if you realize something is nourishkeit and it will not impact their ability to be a good father, good husband, then those are things that you need to look for. And sometimes we need to peel away the nourishkeit, you know, the stupidity or whatever, like how does he dress, or, you know, I don't know, again, what yarmulke, what shirt, or you know, where is he from, out of town, in town, you know, what camps did he go to? I don't even know. But I'm saying all these things are not important. And you have to, like Dr. Alper say, like you have to peel away and say, like, why do I care about those things? You know, is that an important thing to care about when I'm choosing my spouse? Okay. Okay. Next.
One little point. Is that okay?
Yes.
It's also really important. Don't convince yourself that something's not important to you if it is. I've seen that come back to really haunt people, where you know in some sort of objective sense, this is not a big deal. And you'll say it to yourself as a mantra over and over again, this shouldn't bother me, this shouldn't bother me, this shouldn't bother me. But if it does, then at a certain point, again, you have to accept that it does. And don't try to force the relationship ahead, convincing yourself this doesn't bother you, because it's very possible that that thing that, you know, that is upsetting to you, or that is whatever, that rubs you the wrong way, it's a possibility that it'll be there forever. And, you know, you can convince yourself maybe for a short period of time that it doesn't bother you, but over the course of a lifetime, it may come to really undermine in a certain sense the respect or the confidence you have in the marriage. So I think, you know, again, it's okay at the same time to admit this maybe shouldn't bother me, but it does. And again, to really own that, and not to convince yourself of something that you don't believe.
Yes, and I think that goes, you're on mute, but that goes with being self-aware. But yes, Dr. Albert.
The only thing I would add to that is that, yes, so, you know, I have seen sometimes it could be with things that we think are little, things that we think are big, but, you know, I've seen young women say to me that they think they should be okay in this relationship. Like, this should be good. And it's really not, for whatever reason. Like, they just don't feel good about it. But they should. So they sort of feel like I can't end it because this is not a reason to end it. So I should keep going, and they keep going. And I think it's important to remind ourselves that you are not doing yourself any favors, obviously, by trying to make something work that is not working for yourself. That's not great. You're also not doing any favors for the boy that you're with, right? Because he also deserves to end up with a woman who is excited to be with him, not someone who's really like not so excited to be with him, but made it work because she really felt that she should. Like, that's not doing him any great favors either. So at a certain point, and again, of course, this does keep coming back to knowing yourself, but at a certain point, we have to let ourselves be ourselves. And if it's not good, it's not good. And it doesn't help anyone. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't serve anyone to try to make it good because, you know, we heard a panel once and we came away with the idea that, you know, we should, so I guess we will. Right. So.
Right. Exactly. Right. Okay. Okay. So this question is probably most for Dr. Sobolewski, but everyone else can weigh in. How do people date during Corona?
Okay, so how do people date during Corona? So I would say that at the beginning of Corona, and it was more spring and summertime, people were definitely doing more outdoorsy type of activities to be cautious for both sides. And I know that YConnex and other shidduch organizations put together so many lists of options of places to go. And those worked, Baruch Hashem. I think when life got a little more cold here in this tri-state area, I can't speak for California or Florida, but in the tri-state area or Canada, where it's very cold, it got a little more complicated to do safe indoor activities. We definitely have lists of those too, and there's wonderful lounges that are offered in many communities of Baalei Chesed and Baalei Tzedakah that opened up places that people can go on dates. And I'm happy to share that list with anyone on this chat, on this Zoom call. But with that being said, I would also just caution everybody and remind everybody that if you're not so worried about Corona or your family's not so worried about Corona, but the other side is, you should definitely be respectful and cautious for the other side. Because sometimes we're finding that, like, I don't care, I'm done. I don't care if I get it, but now the boy got it. And his parents got it. And now you're both in quarantine and you both can't go to school and you both can't go to work. So no matter what your feeling on it is, it's definitely important to be most respectful of the other side. And if the other side doesn't want you to come in the house, or the other side doesn't want you to meet the parents, or the other side, or your parents, quite honestly, don't want you to go out and come back in the house because you're going to someone who doesn't really have the same regulations that you have in your community, be alert to it and be sensitive to it and be creative and really try to be flexible on how you're going to make everybody comfortable, not just yourself. Because I definitely find that to be a challenge where, you know, we'll set somebody up and then the other side will call and say, how come she or he doesn't really care about la, 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 la. And it causes conflict and it didn't mean to. So that's how I would say that, you know, hopefully we're almost turning the corner with more people being vaccinated and making it easier, but people are still suffering. There are a lot of people that are still sick, and there's a lot of people that unfortunately do not have the vaccine yet. And there are a lot of people that even with everything have lost family members, and you should just keep that in mind as you're going out. You're young, Baruch Hashem, and you're, you know, hopefully young and healthy, but this virus can jump from person to person, and you don't want to be the cause of that, and you don't want anyone to think that you were insensitive or not caring. I think one of the important lessons that we're learning during Corona, we have a lot, that's another share that Moshe Tzvi could give, but one of them is really heightening our Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, how careful and cautious we're going to be for the next person in every level. I got the vaccine, I didn't get the vaccine, and I'm even watching that. You know, where I got the vaccine, I didn't get the vaccines, therefore I could eat and she can't. I'm like, really? That's not so nice. So, you know, or really? Like, so just, and I'm not judging anyone, but I'm just saying to everyone on the call that we should work on our own midos to be careful for everyone else. That's my answer about Corona. But hopefully we're almost done, Mirat Hashem, and then we'll hopefully going back to normal dating. Counting down the days, I would say.
I mean. Okay, Rabbi Weinberg, Dr. Alpert.
I don't really have anything to add. I'm just curious, Revitson Sobolovsky, what's your opinion on Zoom dating? Is that a thing? Is that not?
Oh, yeah, I should have. Thank you for asking. Some people are doing it. Some people are doing, you know, not everyone's comfortable. They feel like it's funny. They don't love it. They don't look the same. Some people feel that way. On the other hand, we have a lot of people that are doing it. And it's the nicest thing when you get a call that a couple got engaged. And when I ask them, how did it work? And she'll say, I was in Chicago. The girl that I spoke to this week, she told me I was in Chicago and he was in Baltimore. And we just Zoomed for 2 months. And then Baruch Hashem, we met. And she even told me, you'll like this, that when she finally flew from Baltimore to Chicago, she landed and the other side got corona. So she couldn't even go to meet the family. And she waited for 12 days there to meet the family, and Baruch Hashem, she's engaged. She told me she could write a story when this is over, but she said it worked. So Zoom dating does work. And I would definitely say that if you could try it and the boy seems like a good match and he's willing to do it, why minimize an opportunity? And you could just try it that way and then see if you could meet them. If you're not comfortable, I understand it, but it's definitely worth the while to try, because I think that the one benefit of Corona in dating could be that people will start doing that when they live far away from each other, and they'll try to, you know, a girl's in Chicago and a boy's in California, maybe they'll Zoom date first before they're willing to meet. So thanks for asking the question.
Dr. Alford?
And I will just say that I'm so happy that you did not start with me for this question, because it was hard. So kudos to Robinson. But the only thing I say, even for people who are willing to do it and it goes well, I just think it's hard. I think that we should acknowledge that, like, this is not ideal and it's a hard thing to do. And I give a lot of credit to people who are pushing themselves to do it. I think the silver lining, if we, you know, are willing to look for one, is that it really does force us to kind of use other muscles that maybe we wouldn't, you know. Suddenly we have to be really listening to what the other person is saying, because, like, that's all we got, you know, and we have to really think about how we want to communicate. You know, we don't have a lot of the other, like, forms of nonverbal communication that we normally rely on a date. You know, there isn't, like, the activity really to keep us so engaged. And we're really forced to focus probably on what's really important, if we're honest with ourselves, right? So I think that that's maybe a silver lining. That being said, I do believe we have to meet eventually. So, you know, Zooming is good for a while, but of course, eventually, you just want to be together and see what it really feels like to be in a room with one another.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I think the main thing is that as Jews, we continue. You know, I think when everything started with Corona last March, I think everybody was kind of shocked. And, you know, most girls were kind of like, oh my God, what do I do? Like, I'm in the peak of my dating life. Like, and it was kind of a shock. And we also did a panel then for everybody, if everybody remembers. And, you know, that was kind of like what, and we all thought, I think at that point, that there was an end in sight. And we didn't realize it would be February and we're still talking about dating in Corona, and here we are. And when I think about this, I think about, you know, our Masorah, that Jews just keep going. Jews don't stop. We, you know, Yocheved and Moshe. We don't have to talk about the Inquisition and the Holocaust and, like, all these Chas v'Shalom awful things. Baruch Hashem, you know, hopefully, you know, obviously a lot of awful things did happen now. But for, you know, for you that are healthy, we continue, we go. The Jews aren't stopping the weddings. Like, all the halls are very happy with the Jews because they're the ones that are getting married. They're not waiting. They're not putting things on pause. They're not waiting 2 years till everything is done. They are going full steam ahead. And, you know, it's not easy and it's very hard and it's challenging and it may be uncomfortable, you know, in different ways, but we keep going. You know, this is your life. You need to continue. We need to prosper and we need to, you know, move on with our lives. And again, in all different ways, in safe ways and in all ways that your family can be comfortable and you can be comfortable. And Baruch Hashem, we have, you know, a lot of different resources to help you. Revitson Sobolovsky obviously is the expert and the bucky on this and, you know, to navigate, but there are so many different ways that you can continue, you know, to date, and whether it's starting or in the middle or wherever you are, you know, this is an important part of our, you know, tradition, and we should all continue. I mean, not we, you guys. Okay. So then this is one of my favorite questions. Should girls and boys, men and women, be setting up their friends? How should they do that? Okay. Yep.
I'm like, can you hear me? Yeah. I'll hand it over to the other two panelists in a second, but I would say they for sure should set up their friends. They for sure should come up with ideas because you're younger. You know the people in your chevra, you know your peers, you also know the people you've been dating. So I would say 100%, you should please, please, please be generating ideas for your friends. And this way, you know, we always know that when you help others, Hashem helps you too, but you definitely should be giving ideas for others. I would just recommend that you find someone that you like as a shadchan in the middle that's a little older, a little more experienced, someone, you know, sometimes when they're married, it's easier for them to facilitate the relationship so that someone who's more seasoned takes care of the shidduch, giving credit for sure to your idea. I do it all the time where I'll say something like, I made that shidduch, but it was her idea. You know, I helped be the shadchan or someone else be the shadchan, but and you get shadchanis for sure. I'll advocate for it 100%. If you thought of an idea for someone else and you tell me afterwards that you made the shidduch, I'm happy to call those parents to say that you deserve the shadchanis also for sure. But it's a very important thing that we should continue giving ideas to others because again, you're the ones in the know way more than us. And it's such a chesed to just generate ideas one for the next. I'm so happy at the end when we set someone up and then they write back, she's not for me, but here's an idea, or he's not for me, but here's an idea. So I would say 100%.
Okay, Dr. Alpert.
Yeah, I don't really have a ton to add because, you know, my answer was going to be like, yes, 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 of course, you know, yeah, you know, your friends. And of course, this is a wonderful thing to be able to do for each other. This, you know, to me, like, that's the whole thing of we're all in this together. Like, that is the beauty of dating at the same time as your friends, is that we're all in this together, we're all rooting for each other. And when you're all looking for jobs, you know, and you hear about a great job that's not for you, but could be for your friend, you should pass that along their way also. Like, this is what it is, you know, you know, these are the things that you're busy with at this time in your life, and you should be in it together and you should be supporting each other. So yeah, I think 100%.
Okay. Rabbi Weinberg.
Agreed. I think every date that doesn't work out should generate, you know, not only disappointment, but okay, you know, there's a reason I was in that situation. There was a reason I went out with that person. If it's not for me, maybe it's for someone, maybe he's for someone that I know. And to get into a mindset, again, exactly like was said, of thinking that way. I think, first of all, it's a sign of tremendous midos tovos and ben adam l'chavero. And I think if we all start thinking in that way, instead of just, you know, it was a lousy date and he wasn't for me, he was too loud, he's too quiet, instead of seeing it as just a lost opportunity for yourself, but to turn it into a positive opportunity for someone else, I think is a beautiful midah. And just again, a very practical way to advocate and to help each other.
Right, beautiful. Everybody hopefully knows where I stand on this because I say it all the time, probably at every single panel that we have, is that yes, you are all the best people to set each other up. You all have brothers, you all went to high school, you all went to camp, you all go to shul, you all have cousins, you all know everybody. And you are the best people to set your friends up. You know your friends, you know people. And people do tell me, oh, I don't know anyone. I hear that, and I'm sure you all hear that all the time. I don't know anyone. I'm sure Rev. Sobolevsky hears that. I don't know anyone. And I promise you, you all do. You all have cousins. You all have brothers. You all have people that you know of that you need to channel and say, like, okay, like, that might be an idea. And I'd like to throw out a shidduch challenge that everybody go home tonight and think of two shidduchim for their friends and make it happen. And that way, if everybody does two, we will have a lot of shidduchim going tonight. And again, this is Ben Adam L'Chaveiro. This is thinking, you want people to think of you, you need to think of them. So it's the same thing. And I think if we all take on that challenge, and myself included, by the way, I'm doing that tonight too. So we are all going to go home tonight or turn around to your bed or wherever you are, and work on two shidduchim. And it's not easy. believe me, it's not easy. It takes work. And we can all then appreciate all the hard work that Rebbe Sobolewski does on a daily, hourly basis. And you will see it's like parting the sea. But Emir Hashem, if everybody puts their kochos into it and everybody puts an effort, that's what makes the world go round. You know, we have to, if everybody just says, I don't know anyone, then nothing's going to happen. We can't all be the ones that sit back. We have to all be the ones that jump in and also think of our friends and think of, even if they're not our friends, even if it's a girl in our bio class, even if it's a girl we saw in the elevator once, I would say in the calf, but I guess that's not really going on right now. But there's just so many people that you have to tap into that sense and really work on making it happen. And it's an achrayus that we all have to be part of. So again, my favorite question.
Can I just add one thing? I just realized that even sometimes we get too busy with ourselves. Like if you're in a dorm room where, you know, there, I don't know how many girls are in each room, but you're in a room where even, this is not just for girls, it's also for boys. And you're seeing like three of the girls in, are always going on dates and there's one girl that's not. Sometimes that girl will call us and say something like, and I'll say, are your friends setting you up? And they'll say, no, not really. So even if the girl is not comfortable asking you, do you have any ideas for me, or do the people you're dating, maybe they have ideas for you, just to be sensitive to that point that like you might be getting all dressed up and running in here and there, and you're always having dates, but your roommate never has dates or doesn't have as many. That's the time to really stop and say to yourself, like, oh, I haven't thought of that in a while. Maybe I should think of if anyone that I just went out with might be good for her. So that's wanted to add to Rachel's point. Okay.
Beautiful. Okay. And with this, we will, I guess this will be our last question. It's a little bit of a heavy question, but how do you know if someone is your best share? Okay. Rabbi Weinberg.
Oh boy. How do you know if someone is your best share? Who says there's such a thing?
Right.
Who says? I said, I think, you know, I often tell people, I think as Jews we believe on it, and I say this very seriously, even though it may sound extreme. I think on a certain level, there's enough common ground between any two Jewish people that if we needed to get married, then we would. And it was a reality for Jews coming out of DP camps. You know, they didn't have the opportunity to choose as broadly or as specifically as they would have liked. I think the notion that there's only one person in the world, like that needle in the haystack that I'm digging to find the perfect person, I don't believe that that's true. Is there some concept of Basheret in Torah literature? There is such a concept. Is it as locked in and as, you know, narrow as we sometimes make it out to be? Absolutely not. I would say that, you know, when I speak to people and they ask me, two points. First of all, when someone asks me my opinion, you know, what do you think? I'll come back to sort of Rebbetzin Sobolewski's story about her conversation with that Rav. And as she noted, you know, from her experience, that was the right thing to say. I will never give someone advice on the relationship until they comment first. You want to bounce an idea off me? You go first. And I'm very annoying to some of the students in YU when they say, Rebbe, what do you think? I say, what do you think? I didn't make a meeting with you to tell you what I think. I came to ask what you think. I said, no, it's your relationship. I don't know what you're feeling. You go first, share what you're feeling, and I'm happy to try to guide you afterwards. But in terms of like what is that thing that bashert that we're looking for, I often tell people that there's really two ingredients, and one is much harder to define than the other. But two ingredients that should give you a sense of confidence that this is my bashert, this is the right person for me. And the terms that I use are love and respect. Love is harder to define. And I'm not going to go into that right now, but respect, I think, is a critical word that a person needs to use in deciding if this is the person I want to spend my life with. Do I respect this person? Do I respect this person? Do I look up to this person? This person doesn't have to be, it's not a teacher, it's not a mentor, it's not a role model in that sense, but do I have a deep respect for this person? Do I respect the way that they speak to people? Do I respect the way that they make decisions? Do I respect the way that they live their life? And I think that's such a critical component, to respect the person that you're going to marry. And I think that's a sign that this is a bashert. You know, this is someone who I'm meant to be with. If I can look at that person and have a sense of confidence that this is someone who again, who I look up to, again, not in the way I look up to certain types of role models, but do I look up to my spouse? Do I see my spouse as someone who inspires me? Again, not in the way that a teacher or a Rebbe tries to inspire, but do I see this as a person who I'm proud to be around, who I'm proud to introduce to others? Not because I'm looking for the other person's, you know, permission to marry them, but do I have a deep sense of self-pride in the person who I'm with? And I think that's an ingredient that, again, might be indicative of a Basharit, again, without locking into a very narrow or literal interpretation of what a Basharit is. But to have a sense of love, which is sometimes a little bit more intangible, but a respect, to be able to say that I respect this person in a deep way, and it's someone who I trust. You know, my wife and I dated, I'll just end with this. My wife and I dated for, I guess, what would be considered in some circles a longer period of time. And to my wife's credit, one of the things that she, you know, she spoke about both at the time and I guess reflecting, looking back, was that she wanted to see me in different settings. She wanted to see how does Moshe Tzvi interact with my parents? How does he interact with my grandparents who were alive at the time? How does he act around little kids? Is he good with little children? Right? Is he good with strangers? You know, how does he treat the waiter in the restaurant? How does he respond to a family simcha? And how does he respond, lo aleinu, to a difficulty, to a setback, to a tragedy? Right? And to see a person in various settings, to have a confidence that, you know, that I don't only know one dimension of this person. They're not only fun to hang out with when we go out and have a night on the town and have a fun activity or go out to eat, but it's a person who I respect and I see the way that they interact with different situations in a balanced and healthy way. I think that's an important part of developing that respect. So I hope that's part of an answer to finding one's Basharit. Again, going back to what we started with, and I think one of the themes of the night, everyone has to look deep inside of herself and try to figure out what it means for me, but you want to marry someone who you respect in a deep way.
Dr. Alper?
Yeah, so, you know, my answer to the question of how do you know is I have no idea how one would know if they'd found their Basharit. I think that what we're really asking when we ask that question is, how can I be certain? You know, how do I know for sure that this is the right thing? And a lot of people struggle with that, obviously, with this decision in terms of dating and with others in life. How do I know for sure this is the right thing? But how can I tell? You know, what's the sign? And the answer is that really you can't. Really, you can, you know, I don't think that we can really know anything for sure. We can think things we can feel them very strongly, but you know, there's really no for sure. And so once we kind of get that out of the way, okay, there's no, you know, bat kol coming out of the sky and telling me, and there's no signs, and there's not, you know, it's not like in the movies when all of a sudden, you know, the pieces come together and it's clear. That's not real, you know, that probably won't happen, you know. So once we kind of get that out of the way, that there is no certainty in this, then we can go back to all of those questions of, you know, is this a person who I want to share my life with? You know, do I, when I am done being with this person, when I'm done hanging out with them, do I have this instinct that I want more, you know, or not? You know, is this a person who I can grow with? Is this a person that, you know, part of the reason that it's impossible to know for sure if this is the right person for me is because it's also impossible to know for sure what my life trajectory is going to look like or what theirs is going to look like, right? We really, if we're honest with ourselves, know so little about what the future will look like, right? So then I think what we come back to is this question of, do I in my gut just feel, and have I seen from our dating experience together, that this is a person who I will be able to handle the ups and downs of life with? Is this a person who is flexible? You know, is this a person who, if things really are not going well and we're really having a rough time, this is a person who will allow me the space to have a hard time and grow and we'll fix it together? You know, these are the types of questions that I think we need to be asking. I think that those are hard and it's hard to really look and embrace that uncertainty. So instead we try to kind of like circumvent it by saying, no, just tell me the sign so that I can know for sure. But that's not how it works. So I think we have to, if anything, go the other way and kind of lean into the uncertainty and make some peace with the fact that ultimately this decision, like really everything else that we do, is at least in some part a leap of faith. And just deciding that, you know, the preponderance of evidence is there that this is good. Our track record together is good. I feel good when I'm with this person and I'm going to go for it. You know, even though I really can't know for sure, you know, I'm making my best choice here. And then you daven.
I just want to give a plug now to this topic that YU Connect started a few weeks ago, a podcast. Mirit Hashem will have Moshe Tzvi and Dr. Alper at some point. We just launched a podcast called called Candidate. And David Bashefkin, actually, popular David, gave an excellent podcast on the concept of Basheret. And a little bit of, you know, Hashkafic perspective, but more of how you make a situation, someone, a relationship, a Basheret. And you really spoke beautifully about it. I would encourage everybody to listen to it. You just do YU Connect's Candidate and however you subscribe to podcasts. We have already three that we launched, but David was the first, and it was really just about this concept of the concept of Basheret. And I thought it was very much on target as to what Rav Moshe Tzvi and Dr. Alper just spoke about of. We don't know anything for sure, but how to make your best guesstimate and how to just jump in when you feel like it's as great as it's going to be. And someone like you said that you'd want to weather the storm with. And because life has so many ups and downs, we could tell that now from COVID. And you want someone that you could grow with.
Beautiful. I mean, this is exactly, these are all our answers with no answers. So when you find your basher, like Dr. Alper said, there's no bas call that comes down and says, you know, this is the person, and you know, you have to, like Rabbi Weinberg said, you have to listen to your God. And everything that we have learned tonight comes full circle, and it's the same message over and over again, that you have to listen to yourself, be self-aware, trust your gut, you know, jump in, you know, and really there's no way of knowing and not being certain. And I'm just kind of, you know, summarizing a little bit of what we all spoke about tonight. And at the end of the day, I think we can all say that the bottom line is we have to have emunah. And I think that's really like a beautiful way to end tonight, to really concretize that it's, yes, we can date every single day of the week, and we can go to mentors, and we can do everything in our power and, you know, get our hair and makeup done or whatever it is to go out. But I think it's also the hishtadlus in our tefillah and our davening and the emunah that we realize that we are all in Hashem's hands. And we have to believe that Hashem has a plan for us, and he wants what's best for us. And hopefully that will comfort you and realize that you're not alone, and Hashem is taking care of us. And I would really love to thank all of our esteemed experts and for joining us tonight. I have gained so much. I can never get enough of listening to each and every one of you. And I appreciate all that you have given to the women of Stern College and everybody here. Everybody here knows also that you can reach out to everybody that is on the panel. You should have everybody's email somewhere. The Counseling Center, Rabbi Moshe Tzvi, is always available. And YU Connects for Dr. Sobolewski. And hopefully everybody has my information. I'm always sending out. So please always be in touch. If you have any follow-up questions, let us know. And it was great to see everyone. And thank you for sharing the night with us.
Thank you for organizing, Rachel, on behalf of all of us.
Thank you. Anytime.
Thank you so much, everyone. Thanks for being
here. Thank you.